PFA website for these two exceptionally engaged and discerning scribes here October 19th.
You're listening to KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, KSCF 88.1 in Fresno, K248BR 97.5 in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. We are doing the Amandala Radio Collective celebrating the celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. We're going to continue with that. Stay tuned.
What up, everybody? Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. Want to welcome everybody who's listening to this day-long celebration of the Black Panther Party. It's 50th anniversary. That's right, we are commemorating it all day long with panels, speeches, interviews. Big shout out to the Amandala Radio Collective for putting this together. We are proud to be a part of it. For the next hour or so, you're going to be hearing a conversation that took place about a week or so ago at the Impact Hub in Oakland. It talks about the use of art and how it merges with activism and how the Panthers saw it. And on this panel, we have a wonderful discussion that features, among other people, Boots Riley from The Coup, Erica Huggins, former Black Panther Party member, Emery Douglas, Minister of Culture from the Black Panthers, Hadari Davis of You Speaks, Young Gifted in Black, and Ashura Akindeyu, who is one of the curators over at the Impact Hub. So we're going to jump into this. We hope you enjoy it. Again, happy anniversary. Happy 50th anniversary to the Black Panther Party. Let's move forward. Check this out.
How y'all doing? Good?
Good. Yeah.
There's a lot of directions we can take in discussions of art and activism and all that, but I want to maybe jump off into it this way, and maybe I can direct the question to Erica Huggins and Boots from different generations of freedom fighters, and then we can pass it along from there. I was just at Joyce Gallery, where they have another exhibit going on, and a lot of people were over there as well. Joyce Gordon Gallery. And Reefa Wan, had noted that out of the 10-point platform, not one of them has really been met. The conditions are still the same. And that was very sobering. And here we are 50 years later, and we're looking at these beautiful posters, Bobby Seale there, all the women on the wall, a lot of collages, a lot of images. And I'm wondering if this movement and the sacrifices that the Panthers made and people who've come after have just become artifacts and art on the wall and not a call to urgency to change conditions. Are we looking at this Bobby Seale poster and saying this is a beautiful poster, and forgetting what him and everybody else who co-founded the Panthers were about, and if those 10-point platforms haven't been met, are we just taking pictures, shaking hands, and seeing these freedom fighters as images to put on Facebook and Instagram and not fight the battle or continue fighting that battle? And so I want to start this off with this in mind. If all freedom fighters are just art to be collected, then where are we at in 2016? And I want to ask you, Erica, maybe, you know, if you see
myself as art to be collected? No.
Not as that, but what I'm saying is sometimes this fight for freedom can just become a commodity and not an actuality in which we're all critically and 100% engaged. And I just want to know, how do we avoid falling into that direction? Are we on this thin line? Do we have to push people and remind them that there's still a struggle? Or is it okay just to take the pictures and admire the art and go home?
When I think of art, I think of the way in which the activists and artivists worked together in the 60s and 70s. There was no separation. There was an art over here, and then dance over there, and film over here, and then poetry there. Those were the activists. And Tariqa Lewis, who is one of the artists for the beautiful Comrade Sister Gallery in Omi Gallery, says when she was asked with her wonderful sense of humor, she was asked what she did as an artist, as a visual artist and a violinist. And she said, well, I put down the violin and I picked up the gun. Now, she didn't mean a literal gun. What she meant was, though she might have, what she meant was it was seamless. And it was the same for me as a poet. And it was the same for all of us. Whatever it was that we were innately moved to do couldn't be as important as the need right in front of us. The 10-point program and platform of the Black Panther Party is a work of art. And I think that we forget that Emory Douglas of the Black Panther Party really meant it when he said, we don't need art for art's sake. It's art for the people's sake. And everything that we did was for the people's sake. And I don't feel like people are just wanting a photo on Facebook. What I feel is that young artivists in this room are wanting to be inspired, right? Well, you inspire me to keep doing what I do. And I think there is, Davey, an encouragement needed for everybody to do something.
I appreciate you giving us that context, and anybody, Boots, anybody can jump in. I want to push back in this sense. I think in the Bay Area, I think there is a seamlessness between art and activism, and that's a privilege. But I think in real life, I think there's still that separation. It's like, let's have the hip-hop thing here, and then we'll have the politicians talk. Let's have, you know, we have culture wars where, as we speak, in many of our schools, they're trying to remove the art. It's not infused in our lessons. Look at the curriculum that's coming out. It's not seen as a form and a viable form of communication, of healing, of all these different things that I think art has played a role in many of our lives, is seen as an afterthought. And I want to make sure that we don't forget what art is for many of our people, indigenously speaking, whether you're Native American, if you have African ancestry, all that sort of stuff. These expressions come from something and serve the purpose, but here it becomes a commodity real quick. It becomes something that we just kind of put on a shelf, and we see that in the way policy is carried out. We see that in the way that education is treated. And I dare say we may be doing this day in and day out if we're just here to see the art but not moved by it at the end of the day.
The, a movement needs art as much as an artist needs a movement. And the reason why is, you know, just like you wouldn't want to listen to an album about love and sex by a virgin who had never been in love, you also, because the songs are going to be missing the point. The songs are going to be generic and cliched and recycling ideas that they heard, as opposed to based on based on what actually transpires in that communication in real life. So, artists, if you want to be make art that's more relevant, you have to be involved not just in politics in some general way, but you have to be involved in organizations that are performing campaigns that are trying to get the community involved, because in that you'll figure out the questions that people have. You'll figure out the points at which people are making those decisions on whether they should be involved with something, and that will spark ideas that make the art that is much more relevant. The thing that's happening right now is, although there is a burgeoning new movement with Black Lives Matter, there is, recently left the Occupy movement, there are things happening. But we've gone for 40, 50 years with movements that are based primarily on spectacle, primarily on let's show that we're upset with this, as opposed to with a plan for how do we leverage our power to do things. So what happens is the artist says, okay, well, if the goal is just to get X amount of people out on the streets so we can show how mad we are, then I might as well just stay here and make just this painting that says the same thing, because it's all spectacle. And to a certain extent, that artist is not wrong. However, it is more connected to what we're making our movements connected to. A lot of our movements these days are easily co-opted by electoral campaigns and things like that, because it is only about spectacle right now. I mean, and that is a stage that happens. But the thing is that what the Panthers were involved in, and why art was able to have a different meaning then, why artists were able to get involved. Like, if you go up to anyone's artist and you say, well, what organizations are you involved in? There's less organizations to be involved with that you could get in and say, I know how that's going to win. I know what strategies this movement is using to win. The Panthers said, here is what we're going to do. And they made it clear that it was about getting rid of capitalism. And although that seems like a lofty thing, the average everyday person knows that the thing that moves mountains in the system, that the reason that we're here is because we're exploited, and the thing that will control power is us being able to withhold our labor, us being able to stop profit, and even in making smaller demands, not that we have to do that. So I think artists aren't involved in movements as much because movements are not yet having their finger on the pulse of the people and showing people how we can win.
Let me ask anybody this. You could jump in, or Hadari or Ashara. You mentioned movements, and I think many people can agree. But are there different type of movements? I would say that there's a drug movement out here. There's a gang movement. There's a capitalism movement. There's a movement that has motivated a lot of folks, and we can see that on any dance floor. We can go down the street, and you'll see a lot more people packed, getting lit right now. Whatever that movement is working. It has captured the imagination of folks more than other movements, right? Go down to any of the clubs. They're all packed right now, right? And they're not having this conversation, but whatever Future put out there or Uzivert or whoever is popping, and they say they're attached to a movement. They may not articulate it the same way, but they are like once upon a time part of the hyphy movement, the new Bay movement, the new LA movement. They have a movement. And so if we have competitions with these movements, and some of these movements may be backed by big corporations, how do we in 2016 take this social justice movement, Black Lives Matter, freedom fighting movement, and make it just as compelling and as attractive and as competitive as all these other movements that have places up and down the block packed, where they're like not trying to hear this because they're invested knee deep in these other movements?
I know I just spoke, but I'm going to speak again.
Anybody else can jump in.
Those movements are talking about what revolutionary movements are supposed to be talking about, which, a song that talks about selling dope is actually connected to something material. You can go out and sell a rock and make $10. It's connected to something real that people can do, and our struggles are about material. They're about, do we have enough money to put food on the tables? Do we have enough money to pay the electricity? Do we have the right kind of housing? And too much we've separated from that, where the average everyday person, and especially the average everyday Black person, that's what they're thinking about. That's not the only thing, but that's the movement they're involved in. I'm going to work. I wish I could come to your march, but I gotta work, right? And so the goal I would hope would be to show that this is, that these movements are about material change. You know, it's about how you pay your bills, how you're gonna, and how we're gonna do that together. Whereas, and that's what these songs that are talked about, that sometimes we put down for supposedly the negative things, they're talking about, hey man, this is how you can come up. This is how you commit. And a lot of those folks that are singing those are doing it in their mind as a community service. And they have a different analysis, which is what the schools teach us, which is that capitalism works. And here's how you come up in this rugged individualist society. And so that's how we compete with it. This is about us all getting paid.
If you're just tuning in, this is the Amon La Radio Collective, David D hanging out with you. You're listening to a panel discussion. Took place about a week or so ago at the Impact Hub in Oakland, talking about art and activism and how the Black Panthers saw it. We're going to get right back to the program.
I'm Hidari, y'all, by the way. I think for the Life is Living Festival, the name Life is Living, I think sometimes we focus on moments in time like they're frozen. And I think that the history of movement is about the transition of time, the movement of over time. It's an era thing. So when I think about the Panthers and I think about this art and I look at it and know that Life is Living wouldn't exist without this art, I know that. I know that this group of young people who are about to rock, they would not exist without this art. And the art is actually what is, and it's the art of our history. It's not just the art of the Panthers, but it's also going back to Langston Hughes. It's going back to Paul Lawrence Dunbar. There's a through line of the ways in which we have used art as a tool of our own resistance. And art is a great tool to actually empower the next generation to carry on that conversation. It's like a way where they can not be starting all over again, but they can actually start in a conversation that's been continuing for hundreds of years. So I don't see, as the Honorable Erica Huggins was saying, I don't see any separation between the art and activism, and that's why Life is Living, I could say it's an activist festival as much as I could say it's an arts festival. But the primary function of it is movement. It's to demonstrate that there is no life without movement. And I think, recognizing the role that our art plays in moving people along, in moving conversation, in moving our emotion, in moving our spirit, in moving our political thought, whether it's an ideology about capitalism or whether it's something, as sometimes people say, blackness is archaic, you know. But for us, it's like our thriving. It's our survival. It's what we hold to. So I want to bring the kids up there to really demonstrate that real quick.
Let's get a couple other. I want to get some of the sisters here, especially since we have that exhibit. So Melora or Melanie. Or any of you, I can never tell the two apart.
It's all good. I do believe that pulling the art forward, pulling vulnerability forward, thinking about the film from earlier today, considering and going back to why we even created the space we created in Omi Gallery, you know, pulling that humanity forward. And I love what you said about the music, because it's really easy to dump on lyrics or content when they have the guts to be vulnerably expressive and bold about whatever is going on. And I think that that's a part of the soul that's missing, that vulnerability, that less trying to be perfect. There's a piece of that people resonate with. And so when we talk about, you know, when people go to the club versus sitting in a space like this, it's almost like I know what to expect. If I go to a place like this, I'm going to hear this. They're going to say that, and we're going to leave. If I go to the club, I know I'm going to get that. So it's almost like, wow me, change my mind. Show me something new, show me something different, tell me how it's going to connect to me materially. And I think if we can, you know, expand and be open to maybe some things we don't even agree with, I think we can really get somewhere.
Somebody once said, when it came to spirituals, mm-hmm. a spiritual is not a spiritual unless it's sung with conviction. And I bring that up because I recall being on a panel about 10, 15 years ago where Suge Knight was on this panel, and he said, I live this gangster shit, right? He stepped on his feet, and everybody feels what I'm saying, and everybody resonates what I'm saying, because I ride for this 24/7, and he said, most of the people in this room don't ride for the things that they talk about, but I really ride for this. And I relate that to this thing about conviction, because I remember the pastor was saying, if you don't sing this song with conviction, people don't feel you. They may hear you, but they don't feel you. So with that being said, how do you bring the conviction to your art so when people walk in the room, whether you have a painting on the wall, or maybe it's these young folks we're about to hear, or it's something in that thing that we look in as something else that touches our spirit more than the actual, like, you have the perfect painting or you have the perfect lyric, but you did something else that moved the crowd.
I think going back to the space, we were willing to not, and excuse my language, we were willing to not know what the we were going to do in that room. But we knew we were going to call in the energy. We knew we wanted to remain committed, that the focus was shifted, that people would get that there was humanity, that that was considered. There was a lot more than, like, you first addressed these images. It's a lot more than guns and pigs. It's a lot more than the hard stomping and the afros. It's like, no, really zoom in. Like, these were real people, very young, very courageous. And so as much as they didn't know what was going to happen, we had to carry that same courage into that space. So not knowing and knowing that you don't know and being willing to just be out there like you did with your piece, like that's the magic. And people resonate. We had no idea. And then having the jewel of Mama Erica saying, this is how we would have done it. This is something that I resonate with. And it was just so validating because we had no idea, you know. So that vulnerability, swing out there. Don't look for perfection. That will always hold you back.
You know, I would... And thank you for that question, because it lends itself to walking your talk, you know, and do I ride for this every day? And we talk about being multifaceted and part of many, many movements. So this space, this building, this place is a container. It's a container for opportunity where you don't know what kind of conversation is going to unfold when you get here. So during the daytime, what does it mean to come in here and work? What is your work? If my work is that I bring the beauty, that's my work. If my work is that I write code or I teach the babies or I save the babies, as my brother Hadari says, is that my work every day? Is that revolutionary? And what we say as part of the conversation here, like at this building where these social entrepreneurs are so-called innovative, if it is not accessible to poor people, if it is not accessible to black people, if it is not accessible to people in the Deep East Oakland, it is neither revolutionary nor innovative. That is the truth. And so what does that mean for us to explore what it means to be an entrepreneur in this place where we show up on First Friday and talk about spirituality, we talk about vulnerability? Is that our work? Is that our container? And so as creatives, we don't separate the conversation of the art gallery from the workspace, which is why the whole building is the opportunity for us to be engaged in this art. And it's why the filmmakers show up, the poets show up, the dancers show up, the authors show up. There are lots of ways for us to talk about what that work is and continue the conversation of the Black Arts Movement. Continue the conversation of the Black Panther Party. Continue the conversation of the Black Renaissance Movement. There is no difference between this. The line is very thin. And so with that, one of the things, when I moved here to Oakland 6.5 years ago, one of the first performances that I saw was this group, Young, Gifted, and Black. I was at a Kwanzaa celebration at Ilorama Day. Got my heart busted wide open. And so here is this intergenerational conversation that's on purpose. It is conscious, and we are conscientious about it. And so we want to continue to lift up those voices, because all is not lost. When we talk about, oh, the young folks, they don't know nothing, they don't have no respect, they ain't got no home training, that is not so. That is not so. So I want you all to, like, welcome our young sisters and brothers into the circle this evening. Their teachers, their elders, as an example of the movement being alive and well. Y'all, make some noise for Young, Gifted, and Black.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you. You've been listening to a in-depth panel discussion on art and activism and the Black Panthers. Our guest, Erica Huggins of the Black Panthers, Boots Riley of the Coup, and so many more, as we are celebrating the 50th anniversary, this day-long celebration brought to you by the Amanla Radio Collective here at KPFA.
All right, y'all. That was Young, Gifted, and Black. Most of these young people recently got back from a trip from Ghana, West Africa, about, I don't know, a month and a half ago. And that's part of it. That's part of using the art as activism and as movement, and just what I was talking about, turning that moment of being into a moment of becoming. And that's what they try to do with their art. We have one other young artist in the house who's actually Azaria Cole Shepherd. She is the Oakland Youth Poet Laureate for 2016. That's official. So we wanted to make sure that the Oakland Youth Poet Laureate blessed the space. So here's Azaria.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. My name is Azaria Cole Shepherd, and like Kadari said, I'm the 2016 Oakland Youth Poet Laureate. Thank you. For the black men my love cannot protect, you are radiant. Your eloquence is the gun they swear you have when they shoot you. The speed of your tongue, a justification to stand their ground. Your existence is the antithesis of their contentment. For this world is not prepared for your potential to succeed. You are powerful. I wrote BART today. As I passed Fruitvale Station, my heart dropped. I thought about Oscar and the bonding his baby girl will never experience at the hands of the bondage that took him forever. I thought about the gun and taser clothing synonymous for the oops that follows genocide, dear black man. Your stark white smile shines like the stars and your lips curve like the crescent moon, but every time I see the night sky that is your face, this fear grows inside. You see, they shot Mike and Trayvon and Allen and Mario and Alton and Alva and Phil. They even choked Eric, and I don't want to know what they will do to you. As the bullet penetrates this tissue, I will buy stock and tissue because these tears won't stop, and I know your tomorrow ain't promised. So today I tell you I love you. I feel that you don't hear it enough. Baby mamas and MTV and even BET screaming, you are inadequate, but you are enough. So as you pour yourself out like libations for those you have loved and lost, black man, remember, you need to stand tall. They say that there is no warmth like the warmth of a mother's arms, her love, a burning passion for your survival. But what does that warmth do for the cold body she caresses? She no longer wears white dresses. Them bloodstains don't come out. The bleach done burned her skin just like the system done burned us. And they dare ask, are you respectable, Negro? Are you pleasant enough to only leave a few bumps and bruises when they beat you? Or are you a beast? Will you break their bones like you break racial barriers and turn them against one another like stiff pages in books you have read? You are intelligent, but how do you use the knowledge in your head to pass the ball whose weight we are crushing under as we wait for social change? Black men, take hold of your sisters, for this patriarchal society means us no good. When you make it to your 21st birthday, please celebrate to no end, for this is a major life event no other race will understand. Remind your sisters that they should stand tall. For we are not stepping stones towards liberation. We be the backbone that backs you up when nobody else got you, dear black man. I continue to carve the words I love you into your skin with my eyes, but I traded my vessels for bullets I would take for you. My cries for cold knuckles raised to the sky and death for deconstruction of a system that don't want us here. So when you make it to the end of this year, you better remember this letter. For we can no longer count the number of fatalities, and I cannot claim your body in the morgue. My cold body may be the one laying right next to yours. You know they killed Tanisha and Sandra and Rakia and Miriam and Shelly and Diamond and our Darnisha. Damn it, the list goes on, and I may be next. Black man, my love. What will it take to make them see your worth? I am mourning, and in the morning I am scared you will not be here. Do you hear me, or have you silenced me like the rest of the community do? I mean, it's fine if you have. The only question that remains is, if I don't speak up for us, where exactly does that leave you? Thank you.
I want to come back, and build on this conversation we've been having. One of the things that always stood out about the Panthers to me is the sacrifice, the continued sacrifice, sacrifice willing to give your life, the sacrifice of willing to go to jail, and so many of you all have gone to jail for long periods of time, and there are many that are still in jail. How were you able to make such a strong sacrifice, and, you know, what drove it? And do you see people willing to make that same type of sacrifice where they may do 30, 40 years in solitary confinement, where they may be forgotten when we talk about the Panthers but never talk about political prisoners and have the urgency to get them free? How did you get to that point? What could we pass along to a younger generation? And maybe what is a pitfall that they can avoid if we talk about sacrifice?
You ask a lot of questions all at once. And
you got 30 seconds to answer.
Well, actually, I've been wanting to shift the conversation to the people who are here with their great minds and great hearts and all the work they're already doing. I don't make the assumption that the people in this room are doing nothing or don't want to do anything, or that even the people down the street in the bar are not doing something. I don't know. What do I know? I know that I made the sacrifices, you called them, which actually, even in Webster's, means a sacred offering. That's what I think I made. I vowed that I wasn't going to scrub floors when I was in prison. I asked them to lock me down because I wasn't going to go out that way. When I was in solitary confinement, I wasn't thinking about just me. I was thinking about all the other people that were incarcerated who'd been there longer than me and would last there probably after I was gone, thinking that I would remain there for the rest of my life. What prompted us was love. I say it over and over and over again. That, and I wish that there were comrades here to support. I don't see any Black Panther Party members here, but there are probably people here from the movement at that time. And I was wanting to engage rather than the talking heads here. I was wanting to, please don't take that personally. I'm one of them. I wanted to engage everybody about what you're doing and what you would like to see happen. And for my own self, what kept me going was that love from people. That's what kept me wanting to wake up another day in prison. That's what kept me from falling completely apart when Al Prentice, Bunchy Carter, and John Huggins were killed by the FBI. What can we do? We can stop holding grudges. What can we do? We can stop acting as if we know exactly what needs to happen. We can all do something, and it doesn't have to be some gigantic organization. We can do something right where we are, with the people that we're with, in the skin that we're in, with the skills and the talents and the resources that we do have. Melody just talked about walking into a blank-walled room and not knowing what to do, and did it. there is always an opportunity for us to do more and more and more. But what is the small thing we can do for the people that we love right around us tonight? What can we do tonight? What can we do tomorrow morning? Who can we reach out to? What current political prisoner can we write a letter to? There are all kinds of prison activists. And I talked to two wonderful young women in the room over there who wanted to dismantle the prison systems. And I asked them if they would please go in and visit the prisoners. Yes, we want to abolish prisons. I do, having been there. But there are people in them that don't belong there. Eddie Conway got out having served 37 years in solitary confinement. There is something so wrong, and each one of us can do something. Every single human heart in this room can beat like that. What are you doing? What would you want to do? What is the movement? It has nothing to do exactly with voting almost a month from now. It's more than that. It's bigger than that. Now, the shift I wanted to make was to the party survival programs. Why did we do that? Because we were scared of the police? No. They still stalked us and beat us and killed us. J. Edgar Hoover said that the greatest threat to the internal security of the United States was the Black Panther Party. We were median age 19, and specifically the Free Breakfast for Children program. Now, anybody can yell out, just call out, why did he say that? Yes? If you can feed the people, you may change. If you can educate the people like we did at Oakland Community School and before that the Intercommunal Youth Institute, if you can take care of the people's health like we did all over the country through the People's Free Medical Clinics, if you can test people for sickle cells so they know how to handle an anemia that the doctors at the time had no clue about. We were the first to test and educate. And it has impact generations later today. We can replicate all of those 65, right? Community survival programs. Hi, Emery. I'm so glad you're here.
That is Emery Douglas. Minister of Culture.
Yes, of the Black Panther Party. So we're not going to live forever. I know that I'm not going to live forever. But there are people here who are living now that will live longer than me. And there are things you can do. You can feed the people. You can replicate a clinic and get doctors to volunteer, just like we did. We didn't have any money. We didn't have anything but love for the people. So, Emery, we're talking about movements.
Yes.
And we were talking about art, and we were talking about what there is to do. And I was beginning to have a feeling, I apologize if I misunderstood anything that was being said before, that we're not doing enough. And that furthermore, what we did back then wasn't enough because it wasn't successful. The 10-point program still is not finished today. An unfinished revolution, as someone called it. However, there are things we are doing. And I just want to thank everybody in this room who is right now doing something in the work that they do and it with the people that they're with.
If you're just tuning in, this is the Amon La Radio Collective day-long special commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Black Panther Party. We're listening to a panel discussion on art and activism and how the Panthers saw it. Hope you're enjoying it. Happy anniversary. Happy 50th anniversary to the Black Panthers. Let's get back into it.
How many of you are teachers of children? Thank you. How many of you are doctors, nurses, lawyers? How many of you are educators outside of a classroom? There's a whole lot going on in this room, and what we need to do is combine our efforts and our skills and our talents to get one of those community survival programs replicated. That's all I want to say. If I don't have any more time to speak this evening, I want to say that the programs that we created, the first of which was to patrol the police, all of those programs are replicable and have a lasting benefit beyond just tonight. So if we can walk away tonight with something that each of us will continue to do or do differently or have thought about tonight that we will do starting tonight, or tomorrow, that would be such a great thing. Bunchy Carter wrote a poem called Nigger Town. And I wish I could repeat the whole poem. I used to have it in my head. But there's a line in it that he says, and he's not using the term in the way we debate about using it, the word nigger. He says in that poem, "Do something, nigga, if you only spit." That line is always there for me. He's not demeaning me as he says it. He's saying, could you just get up off your butt? And can you just do something? Doesn't matter what the something is. You don't need to be called to do it. Nobody has to tell you. You don't have to write about it. You don't have to phone anybody. Just do it. Just do it. And so, thank you for listening to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Emery, what would you like to add to this conversation of art, activism, movement building, 2016?
Just do it. We were young people, and 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 years of age initially, and being inspired to want to contribute to better quality of life, differences, coming from different backgrounds, some from petty bourgeois thinking, others from the street, but putting all that to the side to come together. You had those who were atheists, some were communists, some were Christians, some were Muslims, some were Buddhists, but came together in the context of trying to create a better quality of life
and to transform the thinking and the mindset that it could be done by the broader community.
How did you all fund yourself and support yourself in contrast to what we have now, where so many of us may look for a grant, and, you know, we get caught up in that cycle? I don't think you all had a Panther grant that you all...
not initially, but initially we developed our own printing operation where we could publish our own materials, everything except for a newspaper, so we could print all our materials and things that we did sell. We also had a lot of articulate, insightful, thoughtful speakers who were requested to do speaking engagements, so that brought in a lot of money. We also had those who identified with the movement, supporters, who had money, who came and looked at our operation and wanted to donate to the operation itself. So all that went into the context of our survival. We also had ex-Vietnam veterans who came into the party, who had GI grants. So we were able to buy housing and collectively to stay in those housing. So all those, and we knew people who were in real estate who supported us and contributed to that as well.
Appreciate that. In the spirit of what Erica was saying, let's open this up a little bit. There are educators in the room. Let me ask somebody, what is the big triumph that you're having right now? What's the big challenge that you're having that maybe we can figure out how to overcome right now? If you're teaching young kids, you're educating, what's working right now that we could emulate?
David, what's happening right now in Oakland is the black community is getting pushed out. Over 25% of the black population has been pushed out in the last 10 years. Next thing you know, Oakland's going to be San Francisco, which has, what, 3% black population? What we need in Oakland is black political empowerment. I want to say this, because when you talk about black power, it's not talking about black power just for the black community. Black power is the basis of democracy in America. Just as the foundation of racism in the United States is the legacy of slavery. The movie 13th, about the 13th Amendment, just came out tonight. And that's the Reconstruction, post-emancipation. Well, right after emancipation, the legal foundation for racial relations in the United States was established, about enfranchisement, about suffrage, about protection of basic rights, about land. This is what's happening today. We need a new Reconstruction movement, because this is about democracy for every nationality in America. The foundation, the basis for democracy in the United States is a black political power. Black power matters. I just want to say that. I'm with the Eastside Arts Alliance. I think some people know that. My name's Greg Morizumi. In the 60s, 70s, I was in an organization called the Righteous Harmonious Fist, Iwo Kun in Chinese. It was an organization that came up out of New York Chinatown, San Francisco Chinatown, Red Guard. And we were founded on the Black Panther principles. In fact, Bobby Seale, Emery, David Hilliard came to Chinatown in San Francisco and said, you guys need to get organized. You know, you're hanging out in pool halls, wasting some time. You need to fight for some yellow power. So we created principles based on the 10-point platform and program of the Black Panther Party. But we understood the foundation of racism in the United States. It's the same thing today.
I
say one more thing. In regards to this gentrification, one of the things that there's a motion to build a black cultural zone in East Oakland. That's a real thing. We're looking at 6-7 acres of land right now to build at the center of it a cultural center, a black cultural center run primarily by sisters, affordable housing, garden, a youth training, jobs training program, swimming pool. Something that will maintain the black community here and small businesses that will thrive in East Oakland. That's just something that needs to be happened as a model, because this is happening across the country. It's happening across the country. If you can gentrify Harlem, you can gentrify any colored community in the United States. We need to stop it right here in Oakland.
You are checking out a panel discussion on art and activism in the Black Panthers as we celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Black Panthers, brought to you by the Amanla Radio Collective all day long. We're playing interviews, giving analysis, speeches, the whole nine, celebrating 50 years of freedom fighting. The Black Panthers, brought to you on these airwaves by the Amanla Radio Collective.
All the real Indians died off. You believe that? Of course not. It's the wry title of a new book by Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz and Dina Gilio Whitaker, two American Indian women writers. All the real Indians died off, and 20 other myths about Native Americans. Both women will discuss the book on Tuesday evening, October 25th, 7:30 p.m. at St. John's Presbyterian Church, 2727 College Avenue in Berkeley. This KPFA benefit with free parking and wheelchair access will be hosted by Flashpoint's own Miguel Gavilan Molina. Advance tickets at brownpapertickets.com and all our supportive indie bookstores. That'll be October 25th. Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz and Dina Gilio Whitaker.
You are listening to KPFA 94.1, KPFB 89.3 in Berkeley, KFCF 88.1 in Fresno.